In this episode, you're going to discover why brands should niche down and focus on YouTube.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by WireBuzz.
Hey-o. Sometimes in business, it's best to outsource a project here or there, and you have to know when your skills are best used. And this comes up all the time in video production. Example, sometimes our clients require some other services that isn't directly in my team's wheelhouse, but we're the most logical people to project manage it for clients. Oh, here's one of them. We recently created an animated video game for a multi-billion dollar client, and we created all the animated scenes, and then the freelancer built the game for us. Now, in business, it's smart to know when you can improve the finished product by getting someone else to help you make it even better, right? Now, that's smart business, but you shouldn't always have someone else guide you on your work. YouTube, over the weekend, pulled hundreds of videos promoting essay writing service called EduBirdie, a Ukrainian-based company that connects students with writers to compose their classroom assignments for a fee. The removal of the videos follows a BBC investigation, and because I'm helpful, BBC stands for British Broadcasting Company, and the investigation published earlier last week reported that the existence of more than 250 YouTube channels containing paid promotions from EduBirdie. EduBirdie, which describes itself as the professional essay writing service for students who can't even, charges students a fee starting at $18 per page for each assignment. Now, wait a second here. Wait a second. Did you hear that? Did I get that right? Professional essay writing service for students who can't even? That's their tagline? That's hilarious. They used poor grammar in their tagline as a way to create awareness for their service. Brilliant. That's a great marketing tactic. Well, Sam Guyam, which a name I totally botched, but just go with me on this. The university's minister for England told the BBC that the site is, quote, clearly wrong because it is enabling and normalizing cheating, potentially on an industrial scale. Now, isn't it strange that outside of school, using professional writers, using freelancers, using some outsourced services, maybe even proof your work, or to make something better is totally acceptable in business? And those that do that effectively rise up and can do it for a profit. In fact, it's actually encouraged for enhancing your finished product, but inside of an educational system, it's totally frowned upon. In this last year, for the first time in my entire life, I opened up publicly to many of you and on this podcast and from the stage as I'm speaking all over the world that I was diagnosed at a very young age in fourth grade with multiple learning disabilities, and I struggled with those disabilities all the way through college. And I'm still, as the most competitive person with myself that you have ever met, I am still humiliated when I tell people about my attention disorders or about my visual and auditory impairments that kept me from reading very well. And I had very few writing classes because at that time in my life, you know, I didn't know how to work around my dyslexia. So the words would be all over the place as I'd get on the page. I'd pull words from one line above and jam it into the line I'm reading. And if there's the word not, I'd grab it from six lines below and it would somehow get into the meaning of the line that I'm reading. And so the comprehension was really, really poor for me. My audio skills, being able to listen and to process, was super strong from high school through the start of my junior year in college. This is part that humiliates me. I took most of my tests verbally, and teachers hated it. They hated it. They hated me. They hated any special accommodations. And, you know, I'm not as young as I look. I've had a lot of work on this face to make it look this good. But the teachers back then when you're trailblazing as a student with attention disorders or dyslexia and the teachers don't even believe that exists. They sure gave me a ton of crap along the way and made me feel horrible. But trust me when I tell you that I was a mess. Chaos was my daily education experience, and the SALT Center at the University of Arizona, the nation's leading support program for students who learn differently like me, helped me discover my own strategic alternative learning techniques. That's what SALT stands for, that made me successful today. Now, you would never know if you met me, even if you sat there and looked at it, because I've learned how to overcome or work around or to come up with my own strategic alternative techniques, which I build in to my client projects because I'm an attention hacker and I pull their prospects with limited attention through a buyer's journey so they buy at faster rates. And more often than not, the tool that garners the highest attention, the highest comprehension, and the greatest buying action at the end is video. But if I had a writer back in the day when I was in college, I would have had a much healthier perception of myself. Until the SALT Center came in and saved me, I actually thought I was stupid. Literally stupid. And today I'm proud to be on SALT Center's Business Advisory Board. A huge life-changing honor for me. And I'm a much better attention marketer, a more powerful video marketer, because I understand intimately the attention issues that each prospect experiences, and I am a much better attention marketer because of it. A more powerful video marketer because intuitively, intimately, I understand the attention issues that each prospect experiences when they're researching a new product or a service. You know, this article goes on to say multiple YouTubers said their videos were sponsored by EduBirdie, meaning they were paid to promote a service that encourages academic cheating. And the paid promotions for EduBirdie violate YouTube's academic aid policy, which states that, quote, advertising is not permitted for academic aids. And the site's academic aid policy includes academic paper writing services, providing customized pre-written themes and dissertations, professional essay writing services. Oh boy, how the times have changed. And I made a spectacle of myself in those classes because I'd always have to leave on test day and take my test during professor's office hours. And speaking of making a spectacle of themselves, these people continuously do it. TechCrunch is reporting Snapchat launches Spectacles V2. Version 2, the camera glasses you actually wear. So the opposite of Google Glass, it says. And like I've been telling you since the start of this podcast series, this is a huge mistake, Snapchat. Snapchat is not a device manufacturer. They are not Apple. They are not Samsung, and people will not wear the new version 2 of Snapchat spectacles. They just won't. In fact, in episode 128, I tipped you off on this a long time ago, some 40 episodes or so ago. In fact, let's rewind a little bit and go back to episode 128 to hear what I said. No, a little further. On the last 5 different episodes of this podcast, I've been telling you about how bad Google Glass and spectacles are, why nobody reacts well to having a camera pointing in their face, and how users feel like glass holes after people see them wearing spectacles or Google Glass on their face, pointing a camera at them, and when people react, it is unbearable, and how there are fake tech gurus raving about products that are never going to gain or garner mainstream adoption, none bigger than Robert Scoble, who is often seen embracing and promoting new technologies like Google Glass and spectacles and VR headsets, all crap that won't be viable for the public, for public consumption on a grand scale for a decade. I also told you in that episode, Silicon Beat reports hundreds of thousands of unsold, unwanted spectacles are sitting in Snap's warehouse, according to a new report suggesting the company's first foray into hardware wasn't the success it was hoping for. Now piles of spectacles, trendy sunglasses, that short bursts of video to be shared via social media are laying around, either fully assembled or in parts, to anonymous people close to the company told the information. The information is the source of this, and that doesn't quite fit with Snapchat CEO Evan Spiegel's recent assertion that the company has sold more than 150,000 spectacles, exceeding expectations and blowing away Snapchat's early goal of matching 100,000 units Apple sold for its first iPad. While it's hard to tell exactly where Snap stands on the spectacles front, the company reported to the Securities and Exchange Commission as of June 30th. It had $29 million in hardware inventory, which likely relates to spectacles. So far, spectacle sales appeared to have pulled in as much as $18 million. Now, look, a year before Google Glass was publicly available, Google sent me two pairs of Google Glass to review and also to start promoting on social media and to tease from the stage while I was speaking. And I quickly discovered that Google Glass was, well, not only not ready for prime time, but had so many limitations in the user experience that it was something that I would only plug in if there was going to be clients coming to my office, because it had such a shock and awe effect on them to see something that wasn't publicly available. It's like having the iPhone 12 right now on your desk. People would get super excited about it. So Google said it, but quickly we realized it wasn't for us. In fact, just after we turned it on, people in the office were like, "Well, what do you do with this?" And I was like, "I don't really know." And guys, you know how, you know, like when you were single and if you showed up at a Starbucks with a puppy, like every girl would come up and meet you and you'd end up having a very busy week of dates. Well, having Google Glass at Starbucks before Google Glass was released did exactly the same thing, except every nerdy dude would visit you and you couldn't get rid of them. And the first time I wore it, I could tell you instantly people distrusted you. They were on guard. I remember wearing it at I remember carrying it in my hand at a conference that I was speaking at. And I was just going through the exhibit hall and looking at the products and services to get my lay of the land before I got up on the stage. And I put it on. Somebody said, are those Google Glass? And I said, yeah. And I put it on. And then somebody else walked up. And the girl in the middle of her conversation, when she put out her hand to shake my hand, said, "Oh my God, are you filming me? You're not filming me right now, are you?" And instantly the bitch switch went on. And it wasn't because of her. It was because of me, because I was projecting as a glass hole with a camera pointing in somebody's face. And nobody likes when they're being filmed or recorded without being asked. Version 2 of Snapchat Spectacles will be another disaster, and the big brains at Snapchat once again disappoint. If they were smart, they wouldn't have picked Venice Beach, California as their headquarters. Look, I know a few things. I lived walking distance to Venice, and as a beach kid from LA, that beach, Venice Beach, sucks. And the angry freaks come out at night. That's what happens there. And if I was running Snapchat, I'd fix that horrible user interface. If they're ever hoping to reach anything more than mid-level adoption from a social network, don't focus on devices, guys. Instead, make it easy for people to navigate your stupid app. Instead, you've got an app that nobody that is in the real world that has time that to do really important things, meaning not on social media or on Snapchat, can figure out how to navigate your app, because your navigation isn't intuitive to anybody under 18 years old. Get with it, update, make it easier for people to use, and adoption will go through the roof. Hey, can we talk about the royal wedding? Content is king, But video wasn't born into content royalty. Video earned the king of content crown because of its results, not because it was born into royalty like text or photos. You know, when I was a kid, Atari won the early video game battle because Atari owned the content everybody wanted to play. NBC dominated Thursday nights with television programming for generations because their show content was king. Netflix chief content officer Ted Sarandos said Netflix has 470 originals scheduled to premiere between now and the end of the year. That's 470 original Netflix programs that are going to schedule between now and the end of the year, bringing the total to around 1,000 original series. Now, a recent study, which I talked about in an earlier podcast episode, found that Netflix original content created for 20% of their total views, while licensed content generates 80% of Netflix viewing. And as you may recall, a few episodes ago, when I brought this up, I asked you to help me make sense of that because I knew there was something important there. And well, many of you sent your insights to me, including Robert, who said, "Hey, Todd, warning, slightly longer rant here, dude. Little late on the train, but I just listened to your podcast, great as always, and had a thought about your Netflix fact." So, to me, the fact that Netflix original content is responsible for 20% of their views is peculiar, notably because it can be tied into the Pareto principle, that 80-20 rule that we've all been brought up with. So the theory, as I'm sure you know, states that 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. And in this case, the viewers or viewers can be seen as the cause of the Netflix content. Potentially, what comes down to it is that Netflix, through their algorithms and through qualitative and quantitative research, have picked up that those customers that view their original content are their most loyal and their best customers. So through that, they've qualified that creating and expanding content to their top 20% generates the best returns. So relating that to business, and I love this because now he's giving it as a business takeaway for all of you, right? Which is what we do in each and every podcast when we go through the news. So relating that to news, by identifying your top 20% and focusing your efforts on servicing that demographic, you can expect much higher, greater returns than trying to blanket cover absolutely everyone. Now, Todd, I might be completely off base as I'm no expert, but that stat really tickled my brain. So I loved giving it some thought. I'd love to hear your thoughts. All my best. P.S. Thank you to you and Marcus for your input on a little issue I had a while back. It was truly helpful, and I think I was able to make my client very happy. Signed, Robert. Oh, Robert, that's really cool, man. By the way, I think you're spot on. I think the 80-20 rule works here. Surprised I didn't think of it, but I'm glad you did and that you gave us a business takeaway. Oh, and this is really funny. We answered a lot of audience questions, and Robert sent one, and it was fun for us to nerd out on your question. Really glad to hear that your little issue was turned into a valuable customer experience. That attention deficit disorder moment was brought to you by Netflix, who TechCrunch is reporting, quote, original content is a big priority at Netflix. Ted Sarandos said an estimated 85% of the company's total spending, get this, is going to new shows and movies. Content is king. And original video content has the power to change businesses. And I get to see businesses using video to explode on the scene each and every day. Video for businesses is how we sell today. That's where the entire online world is headed. It's the main thing. And the main thing in business is to keep the main thing the main thing. All right. And if you get distracted and make a spectacle of yourself, Evan Spiegel, it's because you forgot. Video content is king and you lost focus on the main thing. The main thing is to keep the main thing, the main thing. Aight? And then before we get off of Snapchat, I saw this on Yahoo. If you've recently encountered an ad on Snapchat you can't skip, it's not due to any bug or a problem with the app. The company has merely started testing 6-second TV-like commercials. These are ads. Confirming a previous report about their rollout this month. Now, according to Ad Age, some of the app's first unskippable ads include promos for Deadpool 2 and the Samsung Galaxy S9, and they don't show you how much time you have left to watch until you tap on the screen to skip it. Surprise? Well, find out that you can't skip it, and you'll see how surprised you really are. Anyway, Snapchat continues to make itself a spectacle in many ways. Joining us right now is Jeremy Vess. Jeremy is senior evangelist at vidIQ and founder of Video Marketing World. His clients have billions of organic video views and millions of subscribers. He's YouTube certified. The guy speaks at VidCon, Social Media Marketing World, VidSummit, and writes for the Social Media Examiner. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, one of the coolest things is the opportunity to polish and perfect your YouTube tactics. I want to spend a few moments with you, Jeremy. I know you just wrote a great article about why brands should niche down and focus on YouTube. That video starts off with you skating. Let's start off at the very beginning. Why should brands focus their channels to a certain topic? Like, why is that valuable? Why is the focus and the niching valuable?
Well, the problem is basically YouTube is a robot. Essentially, you know, the algorithms are AI and they're constantly learning. So the problem is if you are talking about 3-4 different things, you're talking about ice cream and you're talking about how to make enchiladas and you're talking about dancing, how in the world does a robot learn to send the right type of people to your channel? Because watch time is the biggest algorithm on YouTube specifically. You know, YouTube wants to send people that are going to like your content. So if you're talking about a lot of different stuff, the reality is YouTube's probably not going to send many people to your channel because it doesn't know what kind of people like your content.
All right, so really the YouTube algorithm or robot is just trying to optimize what that audience experience is like. So if you want that YouTube AI robot to send you the right type of audience, you've got to make sure that you cater that audience and you're consistent so you're not sending mixed messages, right?
Absolutely. You know, the only exception are personalities like Ellen DeGeneres can do... She can do anything, right? Because people love her. Or vloggers, you know, people like family vloggers. I was last week hanging out with some of the biggest family vloggers in the world. Some of them have like 5-10 million subscribers. They can go to Disney World or go roller skating. It doesn't matter what they do because people are there for them. And their audience is shared from friends and family of people that love their channel. So there are some exceptions to this rule, but in general, most brands especially really do fall in this. You probably need to focus your channel if you actually want to show up.
Now, I know from an earlier conversation you had mentioned Gillette was able to have a bigger impact on their target customer because they ended up niching down and providing really relevant and helpful information. Spend a few moments and explain that to us.
Sure. So 5-6 years ago, Gillette created hundreds of videos on how to shave. So they created videos on how to shave your head and your back and your goatee. And what's really cool about that is people are actually searching for how to shave my head and how to shave my back and how to shave my goatee. So although they may have not gone viral on any of those, you know, hundreds of videos, they got 3-4 times more views and subscribers than the most viral video of all time in that category, the Dollar Shave Club. So even though it wasn't as cool and viral and hip as the Dollar Shave Club's video by constantly creating hundreds of videos around one topic. They dominated the entire industry.
That's so cool, man. One of my core philosophies in video marketing is just be helpful. Helpful is the new viral. And you could see where Gillette could have taken or was probably tempted, and a lot of advisors in the video space were probably telling them what they really needed was to combat the Dollar Shave Club and do a viral video. But as you and I know, viral videos rarely, if ever, convert. They're more awareness stage and teeing up the topic. And the Aikido principle of using your opponent's strength to their disadvantage plays out really well when Gillette starts just being helpful and not playing into the have to do a viral video in order to be effective. It's so cool when it works out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great, great idea.
All right, so what is the nested meta strategy? Now, and really, how does that work relating to focusing on a niche like you've described and niching down for your YouTube channel?
Yeah, so the nested concept is if you're doing videos on similar topics, you probably want to find your how-to shave. So you want to find that thing that unifies your videos together in the bigger topic. So, for example, a red car is a red car. There's hundreds of red cars, but there's probably, you know, cars in 2018 or red cars in 2018. There's probably always a bigger topic. For me, how to get more views on YouTube or how to get more subscribers is actually a bigger concept than any one video that I could make.
Right.
So what I do is I make 20, 30, 40, 100 videos on how to get more views or how to get more subscribers. And then so the first part of the title is that bigger category, and the second is what the video is about. So in the nested philosophy, you have this bigger category in the title, tags, descriptions, playlists, audibly in the video itself, and it all just ties together. So if you're a DIY channel and you're telling people how to do a painting, you probably want to do a specific type of painting like acrylics or, you know, something like that. So you're going to want to niche down as much as you can, find, match the passion of your channel or your brand with the intent of search people are looking for, and then develop the strategy, the nested strategy around that passion mixed with the intent of search people are looking for.
All right, so this is super, super cool for me being such a nerd. Let me see if I've got this, okay? And okay. So the how to shave ... fill in the body part is Gillette's nested meta strategy, and your nested strategy is how to get more views or how to get more subscribers on your YouTube channel. And I like that because that's being very systematic, very strategic from the beginning on the content that you're going to create. And you're going to go out and target this. And I see this play out across other types of content with different types of strategies that have a very similar core philosophy. And I know it sends the right messages to the algorithm that you end up being the guru of that how to shave topic. How does a company identify what is their nested meta strategy?
So there's a lot of ways to understand it, but there's really is a blend and a match. One of the easiest ways is to start typing in the YouTube drop-down box, mm-hmm. and the search box, and actually see what starts auto-populating. Believe it or not, that is based on the most search intent for those terms. So you obviously know what your company is about. You just then need to understand how to find the topics people are searching for. So start there with the YouTube search box and see what auto-populates. From there, I like to use Google Trends with a YouTube drop-down menu. And now I'm actually looking at trend data across YouTube specifically. there's almost no other tools in the world that show this type of data. So it shows keywords and keyword phrases and related keywords and keyword phrases that you probably haven't thought of yet. And it shows them from interest of time. So you definitely want to be working with keywords that are going up in search intent and not down. You obviously don't want to get on, you know, the downswing of search intent. You want to get as it's starting to rising, or as they call it, breaking out.
Now, Jeremy, you're talking about how listeners can find their, you say niche, you're so much cooler than me, but I just say niche, okay? Which means that maybe my parents weren't as sophisticated or I didn't go to the right schools. But I think our audience knows that if you start with search intent, what you're really doing is asking yourself, what is it that my target customer is doing when they get on to search, and what are they looking for, and how do they discover me? And once you do that enough times, you do enough iterations, and you start using the tools like Jeremy just discussed, you can start to boil it down into your own really helpful nested meta strategy that allows you to own the conversation in that space. You buy that?
Absolutely. You know, the only thing I would add to that is a lot of people want these awesome viral videos and the personality-driven videos. I would say start by answering questions people already have, and then start adding your flavor and flair to the videos as you go along. For example, in the video that I put out last week, I'm old, but I still skateboard. I flew out of the skateboard bowl.
Dude, you Shroup. You kidding? I saw that. I was like, that is awesome.
But, you know, in the first 4 seconds, I'm just grabbing attention. So you don't have to be boring making boring how-to videos. They need to be edutainment, entertainment and education. And we have very, very, very short ADD-style minds these days. Mm-hmm. So you do have to make it pop. You have to make it exciting and extremely valuable.
Which often means that you're not going to film that video with your back up against the wall in your office or in your basement of your home. You did your video, and I'll put it on the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/154. And I'll put this on the show notes page, but in your video, you actually film it at the skate park, which plays into your opening way of attention hacking. Did you feel awkward all of a sudden using the skate park as your studio?
Actually, you know, I'm there all the time. I just went at the right time of day, you know, when there wasn't a lot of people there. But, you know, the older I get, the less I really care what other people think of me.
know? That's so funny. But you were also the only person that wasn't, like, taking a selfie photo there all day with their, like, shoes and what kind of cool swag they were wearing.
True.
Right. I mean, everybody was creating content. You were just doing it for business. Look, I like what you're doing. Start by answering the questions and make sure that you cater to that audience. And then once you get comfortable, allow your personality to roll out. When I do these videos, and I usually am doing maybe 5 to 10 takes until I get the video to what I call Todd being Todd, where my personality is just flowing out of it, because I do know that, yes, I can answer questions and I can be helpful, and that's what my audience is going to like, and I'm going to start off that way, but I'm also going to introduce them to a little bit of my flavor so they know who I am and they'll never forget me. And it sounds like you do the same thing.
I really do. And Evan Carmichael taught me, he says, put in the reps. So for like 3 months, I had to do 26 takes of every video I did. Now I only do 1 or 2 takes, but I just had to get over myself. Right. You know, it was funny. I was in a meeting recently, and I looked across. There's this really amazing woman, you know, very beautiful woman, confident. And she was horrible on camera. And I told her she had to get over herself, unfortunately, in front of like 20 other people. And she got really mad at me and almost started crying. But then when she understood, yeah, it's a bad story. But when she understood what I was trying to, you know, when she got it, and she's 1,000 times better on camera now. She just had to find this, you know, cameras are alien. It's not something most people have naturally. So when you're able to figure out how to just be yourself, you know, you can do really well. But most people are horrible on camera.
But that takes thousands and thousands of reps until it becomes muscle memory and you don't even realize that you were doing it. And, you know, I like this. I actually have gotten so to the point where I'm way over myself, where I don't even check the mirror or my hair or my teeth before I go on camera. I just do it because I do know that I'm going to be creating so much content. It really can't be that bad. And I'm not going to, you know, not use it because I've got like hairs out of the way. You know, you just get up there, knock it down, make it interesting, do some entertainment in there, and then move on to the next piece of content.
You know, a lot of people have excuses like my teeth aren't white enough or whatever. And you don't, you know, a lot of people make excuses to not get on camera, including myself. But the reality is people are mean online. They're going to make fun of you anyways. So you might as well just do it.
You know, it's funny. My wife, we were just doing photos here at the office. And everybody in the team was getting photos. And she's like, no, I don't need to do it again. And I said, well, why not? She goes, because I don't really like the photo on our website now. And I go, well, what do you have against the photo? She goes, well, I think I could do a lot better. And I said, well, why don't you take it again? And she said, well, no, I really like people being surprised at how great I look when they see me. And we all had, right? I was like, wow, that's kind of awesome. And we all have our own ways, you know, of what makes us unique and different. And Jeremy, for those that may have never heard of VidIQ, you know, what is VidIQ? What does it do? How does it make video creators even more competitive?
So VidIQ is a discovery and search tool. It is a Chrome plugin that sits aside of YouTube. So when you're in YouTube, it'll actually suggest keywords and basically help you and tell you what to make based on your content. We have millions of users, and it's quite a powerful tool. If you go to vidiq.com/Jeremy, you guys can actually get a free version of the software.
vidiq.com/Jeremy for a free version of the software. I'll make sure, Jeremy, that link is on the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/154. And if you'd like to get access to a discount, like a really nice discount offer for Video Marketing World, for the listeners of this podcast, all you have to do is go to vidpow.com/save20, like 20, and you'll get a 20% discount for the next Video Marketing World. Jeremy, what's the date of the next one?
It's August 29th through the 31st in Dallas, Texas.
Beautiful. Make sure vidpow.com/save20 to get a 20% discount for Video Marketing World. Jeremy, again, thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
Well, if this podcast episode was valuable to you, all you have to do is go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play and hit the subscribe button and hit it hard. And I'll make sure that every episode gets sent directly to you. I've got a ton of super smart video marketers that are going to be coming up in the next couple of episodes. You're not going to want to miss it. My whole goal is to make sure to educate you whenever possible. You learn when I learn. And if you want to know about digital marketing tactics, news, and trends that'll happen next year, but you want to position for it today, make sure you never miss an episode of Video Marketing Mastery. Online, I do have a course where I teach you how to guarantee your videos generate a return on investment. And really, that's what it's all about. I started this course because every time somebody would get into my conference room, the number one objection they kept giving me was, yeah, this is great, Todd, but how do I guarantee these videos generate an ROI? Because candidly, all I care about is a return on investment. And I kept hearing that so often that I realized that is my audience, my target customer, telling me what their biggest need is. And what I need to do is address that need. Because if I don't address that concern, and it's really an objection, if I don't handle that objection, they're going to hold on to it and it's going to keep them from doing business with me. So I handle it right on the front of the website. If you go to Wirebuzz, the first thing you're going to see is a notification right at the top of the website about how WireBuzz is focused on this number one objection. I want to diffuse it. So the first thing you see is a title, Video Marketing That Drives ROI, right? That is the first thing. If you scroll slightly below the fold, How to Guarantee Your Videos Get ROI. It's a free video course, and you can get access to it. You get to discover the practical three-step system that WireBuzz uses to generate video ROI for sales and marketing teams. Now, let me tell you about this. If you want to get access to it, wirebuzz.com is where you get it. Or if you want to go to a specific landing page, like maybe you're having a hard time finding it on the homepage, just go to wirebuzz.com/ROI. But what it did is it did many things. One, it showed my video quality. Second thing it did is it handled the most important objection. The third thing is it humanized me and my brand, showed our expertise. We do something that nobody else in the video space does. We already know, because we're digital marketing nerds, how to pull people through a buyer's journey and then prove out the ROI, because at the end of that, people are never going to leave us, because we can keep them growing and their business increasing in profit based on the content that we create. And there's few people that do that. It was a key differentiator, and it 10 times our engagement with people that came onto our website, got us significantly more leads that we then convert. And when people walk into our door, when they see me, I'm their guru, because they've already gone through my course. Make sense? There's a lot of different ways that your business could do that. If your business is, let's say, a device that creates better outcomes for your customer, well, then why don't you handle that topic in a mini course where you show people how to create better outcomes for their customers? Oh, and your product just happens to be one of those elements or one of those tactics that gets you better results. There's so many different ways. Wirebuzz.com/ROI is where you can get my mini course on how to guarantee your videos generate ROI. And coming up in the next episode, there's a lot of really good news. There's a lot of information I'm going to be sharing with you, and you're not going to want to miss it. I'm actually was just about to start teasing it, but then I figured, you know what? There's so much here. Why bother? Tune into the next episode. It's going to be great, as promised. And if you've got any questions about video marketing, about how to speed up your sales process, about how to educate your prospects in this new digital age, convince and convert them at faster rates, hit me up. Wirebuzz.com is where you'll find me. And I'll look forward to giving you more information that makes you a video marketing master. Peace.